Everything we do is for the sake of pleasure, physical or mental. So when we're meditating, we're doing it for pleasure too. And it's good to think about what kind of pleasure this is and why this is a worthwhile activity. Why the Buddha says the pursuit of this pleasure or the use of this pleasure is part of a noble path. Whereas a lot of other pleasures in the world are anything but noble. We work with the breath, trying to find a comfortable breath. And then we learn how to use that sense of comfort, that sense of ease. Spread it around the body. So we're working with the pleasure here that's both mental and physical. The breath feels good when you allow it to find a good rhythm and when you allow it to spread around. And there's a mental pleasure that comes as well. The mind is a good place to stay. It feels at ease. It can rest. It can put down a lot of its guard, a lot of its tendency to be willing to or ready to jump off at any moment. Because it's used to the pleasures of the world. You stay with them a little bit, and then you've got to jump off. And here you can relax into the pleasure. It's more reliable. That's one of the reasons why it's better. And at the same time, there's a lot less karma involved with it. A lot of the pleasures of the world involve getting something from somebody else, either through honest means or dishonest means. You're feeding off of that person or those people. Or that situation outside. There's karma there, and there's a kind of weakness there as well. You need to have things a certain way outside. And if they're not that way, the mind gets really upset. Whereas if you have this source inside, you're a lot more resilient. You can put up with whatever there is out there. It's like having your own private source of wealth, and the economy may be going pretty bad, but you've got your internal source. As the Buddha said, if you have this source of inner pleasure, it can help wean you off of your need for sensual pleasures, wean you away from your clinging for sensuality. Now, the word sensuality here is not just the sensual pleasures. It's actually more the mind's habit to make plans, make stories around sensual pleasures. Your plan for where you're going to eat, your plan for this relationship, your plan for this place to live, your plan for this house, this plan, this car, whatever. The things outside, the pleasures outside. And there's a lot of story making around that. And we're stuck on the stories. And the stories are intoxicating because we lose sight of the fact of what is the actual pleasure there in that sensual pleasure, that nice touch, that nice sight, that nice sound. We tend to dress it up in our minds a lot more than it really is. And so there's a lot of subterfuge going on. There's a lot of makeup put on things. And then, of course, those things are going to change. And either we go running after other things or else we start getting really disappointed. There's some things that are hard to replace. Certain relationships are very hard to replace. And what that means is the stories that we used to find delight in now turn on us. And one of the good things about the pleasure of inhabiting the body, what the Buddha calls the pleasure of form, i.e. how you feel the body from within, what they call proprioception, your sense of the body as you feel from inside. That's a pleasure that doesn't have many stories at all. Or how many stories can you make about the breath? A few stories you might be able to tell about particular times when you use the breath energy to deal with an illness, or use breath energy to deal with one problem or another. But the stories are a very different kind of story. They're a lot less sticky than the stories that go with sensual pleasures. they're a lot less intoxicating. And at the same time, the pleasure of the breath is not so much the pleasure in the stories, it's in the actual immediate experience of the breath right here. So you can use this as part of your experience to take those other stories apart, the ones that either have already turned on you or have the potential to turn on you. You want to be able to get yourself out of those. And learning how to find a sense of pleasure with the breath really helps, because you begin to see more clearly what is the pleasure in that storytelling. All the plans that you make for future pleasures, and then all the stories you're telling yourself about past pleasures. Where is the satisfaction? Where is the gratification? And if that kind of pleasure and gratification is the only thing you have, you're not going to be willing to look at it too carefully. You don't want to touch it. But if you can step out, and the breath is one of the ways of stepping out of those things, because it gives you an alternative sense of pleasure, then you begin to see what the pleasure was, what the gratification was. And you can also begin to see that it's not worth it. So when we're meditating, we are very much looking for pleasure. It's part of the path. You look in the Buddha's descriptions of right concentration. There's pleasure and rapture. There's pleasure. Mental equanimity, but physical pleasure. I mean, all the way up through the third jhana, there's got to be pleasure of some kind. Because the mind needs that. As the Buddha said, you can't peel yourself away from your attachment to sensuality unless you've got this pleasure. And it's paccatang, as the Buddha said. It's something that's totally inward. It's part of your experience that you don't share with anyone else. How you feel your breath, nobody else can know. How much you suffer over your stories, you can tell other people, but they don't actually feel it directly. And the relief you feel when you've been able to pull yourself out, and again, that's something you know. But it's not a story you can really tell to anybody. So we're looking for a pleasure with fewer and fewer stories, a pleasure ultimately with no stories. And sometimes you find that finding this pleasure inside doesn't give you enough grounding to pull yourself away from your storytelling mind. This is when it's good to think about the night of the Buddha's awakening. His first knowledge was lots of stories, stories of his past lives. And one of the big features of that was his experience of pleasure and pain, what he got to eat, and then how he died. Story after story, life after life. He was able to pull himself out of that by looking at the large picture. We have that chant just now, I'm the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, and then we have the chant, all living beings are the owners of their actions. The purpose of the first chant is to give rise to a sense of confidence. When you think about aging, illness, and death, what have you got? You've got your actions. That's your way out. But when you think about all living beings are the owners of the actions, that's paired with equanimity. Because it puts your stories in a larger context. You begin to see that the stories of your sufferings, the stories of your happiness are not all that unusual, not all that out of the ordinary. And it's chastening. You can start putting things into perspective, seeing things from the point of view of karma. A relationship ends, okay, you had some karma that was enabling you to stay together for a certain amount of time, and then it stops. Relationships don't work out, okay, the karma was not there. And we're talking both about past and present karma. That helps to depersonalize it, and there's so many ways that when you depersonalize pain, you've taken a lot of the barb out of it. It's the same with nasty words. People behave in ways that are insolent, they behave in ways that are disrespectful, they behave in ways that are irritating. You just say, okay, that's the way human speech is. It's not all that out of the ordinary. The Buddha even has you say, an unpleasant sound has made contact at the ear. We don't usually think in those terms. We usually think in terms of the story. Why is that person saying that? Why do they think this? Why do they? And it goes on and on and on. But if it's just an unpleasant contact, sound has made contact at the ear, it's very impersonal. And it gets the you out of it. That's the problem with all the stories that have to do with sensual pleasure. There's a lot of you in there. You did this, and then that person did that, and then you did this in response, and they did this for you. Whereas you're right here with the breath, the sense of you changes. Just the observer, and then you're the breather. It doesn't totally go away, but it has a lot less of the sticky stuff that gets entangled in stories, all the spider webs that tie everything together in stories around sensuality and the pleasures you get and the disappointments that come when you lose those pleasures and the desire to have some more. And John Fuyang once said, you think about the sensual pleasures you want most in this lifetime, he said, it's a sign that you've had them before and you miss them. He said, just thinking about that for a little bit should be enough to get you disenchanted with them. Now, for most of us, it doesn't work. And we keep thinking, well, maybe if it changed a little bit this way the next time, maybe it'll last longer. All we can feel right now is the hunger for the lack, and thinking, well, if we get that lack made up, okay, then we'll be happy. But it doesn't stay, and it's not as satisfactory as we tend to dress it up to be. But remember, we're drunk on the stories. We're intoxicated by the stories. So we've got to figure out some way to pull ourselves out. So it's either through taking the larger view in terms of karma, or taking the immediate view in terms of you've got an alternative source of well-being inside that you can tap on if you're willing to do it. It's right there. It's a matter of developing the skill. It takes a while to get the hang of it, but it's a skill worth developing. It requires that you invest your activity, your intelligence, your ingenuity. You can't think that just sitting here observing things coming and going, arising and passing away, that's going to do it. It's not going to do it. Because you watch them arise and pass away, and then part of the mind says, okay, where's tonight's snack? And if you pretend that it's not there, then you've got all these hidden parts of your mind. We have to be open about the fact that we're here for a sense of gratifying pleasure. But we want to use more discernment in how we look for our happiness, why we look for our well-being, we look for our pleasure. The Buddha, after all those years of self-torment, after realizing that self-torment was not the way, this was running away from pleasure of all kinds, asked himself, is there another way? And he thought of a time when his mind was concentrated almost spontaneously when he was young. Got into deep absorption with a sense of pleasure and rapture. And he asked himself, could that be the way? And something inside him said, yes. He hadn't tested it yet, but that inclination, that idea was, the germ of the idea was planted. But then there was the question, why am I afraid of this? And he realized there was nothing blameworthy about this pleasure. In other words, it didn't create any bad karma with anyone else, and it didn't create any intoxication in his mind. So look at the stories that have you intoxicated. The pleasure you get there is not a blameless pleasure. Look for a pleasure that has fewer stories. until you reach the point where you can find the pleasure you can't really tell to anybody else. You can't even describe it to yourself. You can't share it with anyone else because it is totally bachatang, as the Buddha said. And as John Lee once said, it's good that nobody else can know about it, because things that other people know about aren't safe. But this doesn't mean that other people don't benefit. You're now coming from a position where you don't have to feed off them anymore. And you can help them in ways that are appropriate to their needs. They may not appreciate your sense of what their needs are, but what you see what their needs are, you provide for that. And because you're more free, you have a wider range of ways of helping people than you had before. So even though you can't tell anybody about the well-being you've found, when you find the well-being that lies as the fruits of the path, still it's not a selfish activity. The Buddha said it's noble, both in its impact on your mind and in its impact on others.